This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I am Jamie Jennings in Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 4th, 2017, episode 1790, brought to you today by horselovers.com. Good morning, horse world.
Guess what day it is, huh? Anybody? Julie, hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me. Mike, what day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Wednesday.
That's right, it's hump day with your Horses in the Morning hosts, Jamie, that girl Jennings, and Glenn, the geeky pony guy. Wednesday,
Well, that's right, it is Wednesday. Thank you so much for joining us today. I have some good news, Jamie, to start our day with, and that is a Swift Air flight carrying 20 tons of hay cubes and veterinary supplies departed from Miami on Monday to land in Puerto Rico. The plane was funded by the Jockey Club and Thoroughbred Charities of America, Horses First Fund, and it was a result of a week-long effort to get that much in supplies together. If you remember right, we had the woman on from the Caribbean Thoroughbred Alliance there who talked about the 800 thoroughbreds that were stuck at the racetrack.
Yeah.
Well, that's where these supplies are headed. The hardest part they had was actually finding an aircraft because all of the available aircraft that carry supplies like that were carrying humanitarian aid. So what they did is one of the board members from the Thoroughbred Charities of America reached out to Vincent Viola, who is the owner of St. Elias Stables and also a shareholder of Swift Air, who was able to get a plane to send these supplies down. And I did hear that the horses are in pretty bad shape, so they'll be needing those hay cubes for sure and the veterinary supplies. Also, Calibreeder Sales in Florida breeder Kim Heath organized five shipping containers of supplies and feed. They were transported from Ocala to Jacksonville last Friday, and they're on a cargo ship, and they're due to arrive on October 6th in San Juan. So, they've organized. There are people out there helping.
Let's put some speedboat on that.
That's the problem, though. You know, till the ports got fixed, they only had one dock open, so they could only get one container ship in at a time. And now they've gotten four or five open, so that they're able to get more ships in. And there's ongoing support. There's nearly 1,500 thoroughbreds and thousands of other horses on the islands, so there's all kinds of support being sent their way. Let's hope it's in time for a lot of the horses. But there's some good news. There's some things happening on that front, and I know a lot of you donated to all of these causes and certainly will be appreciated both on the human and the animal side. And absolutely, we also have, for the first time producing our show, Jemmy's here. Hi, Jemmy.
Hi, guys. How is everybody?
Hi, Jemmy.
So, hi there, Jemmy.
So I have Jennifer slave driving on something else. Jemmy, you're going to start joining us, what, once a week on Wednesdays?
Yes, I'm very excited about it.
Now, most of that's because Jennifer wants to ride on Wednesdays, so that's why Jemmy's filling in and helping.
All right, well, I'm going to start riding on Wednesday mornings, and I'll see you guys later. Have a good time, Jimmy. Thanks for filling in.
You Bye-bye. Got it. I'm glad, happy to pick up the slack. You got it.
Bye-bye. See you soon.
Jemmy, what do you know about horses, especially horses' feet, because that's part of the topic today, so...
All feet or feed, because I know about their feet a little bit. I did have to clean some hose and some
shoes. I made her clean Scooter's feet when she was here. I made her do
that. Wow.
Which, you know, Scooter's feet are about 2 inches
and
across, so...
Smelled really bad.
Sure.
Really bad.
Jemmy, what's coming up on today's show?
I got to see Nigel Yeah. Okay, so on today's show, Fran Yurga on a new service called Hoof Search, Crappy List Wednesday, Gretchen on the Calvin Center Equestrian Program, and today is, get this, guys, National Taco Day, National Vodka Day, National Pumpkin Seed Day, National Golf Lovers Day, and National Walk to School Day. So, after walking your kids to school today while drinking your iced pumpkin latte, go play some golf and then finish up with a round of tacos and vodka shots, guys.
Best day ever.
Jamie, when we talked about Indian food on Monday, and then you went out to lunch and had Indian, right?
I had to after talking. It's so funny. You both of us were coming at our guest on Monday with a different approach.
Yes.
I said, oh my God, the food there must be amazing. And Glenn types to me, I was just about to say the complete opposite.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I hate Indian food. I don't like curry. So.
Oh my God, it's so good. So yeah, we went to India Garden. Chad and I did. He had the day off. So
today you can go golfing with Chad and then end the day with tacos and vodka.
Tacos and vodka could happen.
Probably happens anyway. It does not need a national holiday.
It's kind of a normal day around here. Exactly. However, Chad does love some golf. Maybe I'll have... No, he can go by himself. No. You take the kid.
Thank you, Jamie. All right, Daily Winnie time.
I'll post a picture of my tacos and vodka later.
Okay. All right, good. So my Daily Winnie goes out to Olympian equestrian gold medalist Gillian Rolton, who received the key to the city of Adelaide, Australia. We have a lot of Australian listeners, so I wanted to give this for their benefit. If for those that were here and saw it, and I know, Jamie, you didn't see it live, even though you were at Atlanta during the time, but she rode in eventing in the Olympics in Barcelona, and she won her first gold medal in 1992, but then she became a household name in Atlanta in 1996. She was riding during cross country, and this, you got to remember, these are the days when you fell off, you just got back on and you kept riding. You weren't eliminated. So she fell off at a first. The video I watched didn't really show that far how that happened. But when the horse fell. Okay, because it didn't show that in the video. I couldn't
the
see.
The horse fell. It's just like slipped and fell.
It wasn't even at a jump, right? It was away from a jump. Yeah. It was coming around a turn. And then she fell, broke her collarbone, and broke her ribs, and got back on her horse, Peppermint Grove. And then you can describe the fall into... She took a bath a little bit later, too.
Well, she's coming... She's got a broken collarbone and broken ribs from when her horse fell, I don't know, a minute before.
Yeah.
And she comes into like a water jump where she jumps up, but it's a drop landing. And the horse drops into the water and she just can't stick it. I mean, because she's coming in really under power because she's got all these broken bones. And so she comes in really slow and he kind of like props over and kind of crawls over this jump. And then there's a drop into water on the other side. And she just, she went swimming. But then, crazy thing, gets back on and finishes the course.
And won gold again.
So obviously team gold because her score must have been in the thousands, but they must have had to have a finisher is what all I'm thinking. And I do think that in 1996, was I eventing in 96? No, I didn't start eventing till 98. So I don't know if your horse could fall. I mean, I guess it could. But
you just got back up and went. There was no.
I thought
that
you could fall off twice. So maybe it was a horse fall, and then she fell. I don't know. We should have her on.
It's a whole different ball game back then, wasn't it? It really was. When you even see the riding, I mean, it was a different ball game back then.
I mean, when I was eventing, you could fall off and get back on as long as you could catch your horse and somebody could grab your horse and give you a leg up. But other than that, you were kind of on your own. But you could fall one time and get back on. You couldn't fall twice. And then I really thought that if the horse's shoulder ever hit the ground, you couldn't get back on. That must have been after 96 when they decided, hey, that's a bad idea for the horse.
Back in the Bruce Davison days in the 70s and 80s, geez, if they both made it across the finish line alive, everybody was happy.
Yeah, right.
It was a whole different ballgame back then. It really was. All right, your turn.
All right. Well, my Daily Whinny goes out to, check this out. So you've heard of the racetrack Laurel Park?
Yes. Where is it at?
So and you're going to ask me that. Of course, I'm choking on that. So
I'll look it up.
Okay. So Laurel Park, when you go to bet at the racetrack Laurel Park, which is not one of those like super fancy tracks, right? But you go to cash your winning ticket by putting it in the machine. You put your ticket, you're like, I won $50. And then you go to put your thing in the machine. They're like, hey, before we give you
Maryland.
Your money.
It's in Maryland.
Maryland. Yep. Thank you. Before we give you your money, would you like to make a tax deductible contribution to the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance?
Really?
It gives you that chance now.
Huh.
So, I mean, I if I won money, I'd be like, yeah, sure. You know, I just won it off the ponies. Let's give it back to the ponies. Okay. I think this is so exciting that it's the program. It's first of its kind, and it's going to be available at Stronach Group Tracks through its subsidiary, Amtote International. All of that is crap to me, but basically, so are you sitting down?
Yeah.
This concept was initially proposed by PETA. They actually did something helpful. So PETA proposed that they should, hey, when you're cashing your tickets, make a donation. And it has come true. And now if you want to donate, the terminal will issue you a receipt indicating your donation, as well as the 501c3 identification number for Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance. So, and then you get, you know, the rest of your money. Isn't that awesome?
That's awesome. And I didn't know. I'm going to be interested to see. So what do you think? Do you think people are going to do it, or are these old race guys not going to do it?
I don't know. I mean, if I was cashing a ticket, I would certainly do it. I mean, even if it's just every single transaction is a dollar, I think people would do it. I hope that this catches on. I wish it wasn't PETA that suggested it, because then more people would be excited about it.
But it's not going to PETA. It's going to the Aftercare Alliance. So that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Stronach family is like that family that has done just, you know, they're like the people in racing at this point. And they have been leaders and the Thoroughbred retirement kind of organization. So it's pretty cool. I think once it catches on there, it's going to catch on all over the place. Hey, you degenerate gamblers, give some of your money to Way to Good.
There you go. And there was, boy, at Tryon, did you see the video to there, the pictures? I don't know. Was there a video with it? I just saw the pictures of the creeper guy.
Oh my gosh. What is going on at Tryon? There is a guy. Did you see this, Glenn?
I just saw the pictures. That's all I saw.
You can watch video. There is, it looks like a bunch of really fancy dressage horses in a barn in Tryon, and they've set up some cameras overnight to record, you know, with the horses, and then we can maybe check them and stuff. There's a dude that is walking around the barns at Tryon in the middle of the night. Clearly he is on something. Okay. So he's walking around. Apparently he flicks lit cigarette butts at the horses, throws something at them, feeds one of them something, and is roaming around and was in there for hours. So I guess it was like maybe the time where nobody checked the camera, but I would say that if somebody was in the barn flicking lit cigarette butts at horses, I'm hitting first, asking questions later. I'm gonna find you. Now, so they have posted.
They've had problems, and Tryon's obviously not gonna want to talk about this, right? But they've.
Get somebody from Tryon on.
Yeah, that ain't happening. So they've had problems up there with trailers being broken into, and we've heard from other listeners and people who have been and competitors have been in that area that have had problems at Tryon. So I think they're trying to increase security. They're going to have to before the WEG. Well, WEG security will be really heavy, but they definitely, this has been a little bit bit of an issue ongoing for the last couple of years with this situation. Now, this could have been a drunk or groom. Who knows? You know, we don't know who it was. But, you know, it could have been a very intoxicated individual.
Aren't they like in a, kind of in the middle of nowhere?
Nowhere. Yeah. Nowhere, North Carolina. That's exactly where they are.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Ooh, scary.
Yeah. And there was a person that had their trailer that they had to park off site. So they parked all the trailers off site because there were so many trailers there for the jumpers, and their trailer got broken into and several others at the off site lot. So they had to finally put a fence around that and try and secure that. So they've been battling this issue in Tryon. You know, obviously it's an issue that's across the country, but they've especially been battling this issue, you know, all the time there. So I'm sure that security is going to be increased as we get closer to the WEG.
Well, I just, it must happen in spurts, because here in Arizona, there's a boarding facility not too far from me. And all of a sudden, and it's Western, all of a sudden, I started getting people coming to my house asking if I was doing boarding. And another friend down the street was having people just come knock on her door. Are you guys doing any boarding? Turns out that this facility up the street is like, you can't have something not get stolen unless it's nailed down. And even things that are nailed down were getting stolen. So they said that there was people's trailers were getting stolen. People's saddles were getting stolen. People started putting their saddles in the trailers in the saddles, and the trailers are getting stolen. They said that people were stealing the halters off horses' heads.
Oh my God. Did they target this one place or what?
One place. So I don't know. I haven't followed up with it because everybody left. I mean, just everybody left. They were like, we're going to, our horses.
Talk about
are
kill your
stolen.
Business. Jeez.
Yeah. So just, and it's an arena, you know, not too far from me. And they lost all their borders. And I mean, the vet.
Time
that
to put up your security
like,
cameras, Jamie. Time to put those.
Yeah, right. Like, you guys taking borders? No, 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 we're not. Not at all. Because my facility is the most unsecured place on the planet.
And Jamie lives in Alabama, by the way, if anybody wants to know.
I do. Yes. I live in South Texas.
South Texas. That's right. That's where she lives, in the middle of nowhere. You'll never find it.
Sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
All right, we're
guns,
going.
I mean, we'll shoot you, but you may get away with it. You may get one saddle in your car before I shoot
just
you.
Just keep in mind that her husband flies fighter jets. He can drop a bomb on your house. So let's just keep that in mind. Not that he would.
Doors open, but that's there's right. guns inside.
Right. All right, let's go to a guest that we've had on in the past, and she is one of the leading journalists on horses' feet, and that's Fran Yerga. You all know her from her articles. Hi, Fran.
Good morning.
Good morning. World. Yeah, good morning. It's good to talk to you again. Now, I have to tell you, Fran, you came on with us first when we started this show, and we were having a running argument still back then, and it's still going on because Jamie insists that I don't know how to pronounce the word H-O-O-F. So I've forgotten now which version of H-O-O-F you say.
I say the U version, hoof.
The regular version, the American version, the non-British version.
Not hoof.
It's hoof. You guys all have it wrong. You know, what is wrong with you
too
people?
Too much work. Way too much work to say hoof.
I thought I had you on my side. Goodbye, Fran. It's been nice talking to you.
No, because she's normal, right. Glenn.
I cannot win this argument. All right, so we're talking about hoofs. Is it hoofs? Hoofs. I don't even know how to say it anymore. You guys have me so confused.
It'll take a long time if we have to say hoofs.
She really is on your side. All right, so we are talking about something. Is this something that you have put together?
Yeah, this is a new project. It's just something that I've been working on. I've been working on it for decades, really, but I never thought that it would be something that people were interested in, and lo and behold, one day I actually mentioned to someone this little secret that I do. And they said, oh, well, how can I subscribe to that or something? Or how can I get that too? And so it's really turned into something. And it's just an idea whose time has come, I think. I named it Hoof Search because it's kind of like it's a scouting report, really. It's a compass to guide you through all the hoof-related research, and it's really much broader than just the hoof, but everything related to the hoof. And it's a monthly report that comes out, and it lives on the web. It's live linked, and it shows you everything that was published in the previous month in peer-reviewed journals, conference proceedings, and university repositories. So this is a way to have your finger on the pulse of what is going on in both equine research and the theses that people who are getting masters and doctorates in equine research, what they're producing. And you can see the trends. It's divided into 15 chapters, and you can see the trends of where the research is going on, where the money's going, if you're a funder, and also kind of what the future, where we're headed.
So this is a place where people can go and really see everything that's being published about horses' feet. I'm not even going to say the word for the rest of this time.
Yeah.
About horse.
Yeah, let's call them feet.
Yeah.
Thank God.
And this is a great idea because the feet are where a lot of the issues with horses start. But there's so many, and we talked about this before, I think, off air. There are so many articles, well, like in anything in life, there are so many articles come out that contradict each other when it comes to horses' feet, too, as well. And I know you've had to weed through that through the years, even in your journalism.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm still weeding through it. And that's one thing that Hoof Search does, is it shows you, contradictory reports that are being published, but you can look at the methods that the researchers use to prove their point. And, I'm someone who believes that hoof science is an inexact practice based on what the condition of the horse's foot is, the severity of the injury, and the skills of the person doing the work. And we're also able to look at surface research, stable management, everything that goes on around the horse's foot as well, and see all the research that's going into those areas. And it's very interesting to see it all in one place. I did this for years. I just, kept sticky notes and threw them in a drawer. And once a year I would assemble them all into one report. So I have all these years going back and back and back, and the amount of research that is being published is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. It's increased about tenfold just in the last 10 years. If you can believe that, with all these universities, colleges, community colleges offering degrees, there are just an amazing number of papers available to people. And
now,
people don't know about it. There's no way to find out.
Our horse owners being more involved now than when you started years ago, are they being more involved now in learning about the horse's foot? It used to be we just relied on our farriers. But I think that's changed, hasn't it, in the last at least 5-10 years?
Oh, absolutely. Well, just as we've all taken responsibility for our own personal health, we're very involved in decision-making because we know what the effect of use and environment is on the horses, and there's just no end to the changes and the slight alterations that you can make in the care of the horses, and some of the research is very helpful in that way. I would say that a lot of research is, for want of a better word, for research's sake, where you're looking at something that is a progression of studies with a goal in mind, such as somebody's PhD project or something. But there is some information that's available that is directly relevant to horse owners, but I see it as a much bigger picture of seeing where all this is going and where the money is being invested into research, and what the future holds, especially in terms of evidence-based medicine and what they're now calling evidence-based farriery, which sounds like an oxymoron, but there are people that believe that that could actually be a practice.
Do you think that farriers have gotten better and are trying to be more educated now than before? Do you think they're working harder? I mean, and obviously that's an individual basis, but as a group.
I'd say the ones she works right. with are.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been around farriers for decades, and I can tell you that from the first day I met them, they were interested in research and interested in as much knowledge as they possibly could get, because they just didn't have the pipeline that other professions had. They don't have an established system, but that is about to change, and changing. It's changing in a very exciting way. That there are many more programs now that will accept farriers for advanced degrees and to do research. Research teams are including farriers. And in particular, there's a program that started this year at the Royal Veterinary College in England, which is having a United States program starting next year. And this is called, it's called Graduate Diploma in Equine Locomotion Research. It's basically how horses move, and however you want to interpret it. And that is strictly for farriers, and they've just accepted 20 U.S. farriers into that. So they're going to be able to get an advanced degree for the first time.
Now, are these farriers that are coming into it, or are these farriers that are relearning? Because I have a notion that if you try to tell a farrier how to do a foot, you ain't going to get too far. But if they're coming seeking the knowledge, maybe they will be interested.
You know what? I was really surprised. I said, well, who's going to apply for this? Is it going to be young people? Is it, you know, are women going to be more interested in this program than men? Is it going to be people with 5 years of experience or, you know, right. 25 years of experience? And I would say that most of the people that I've heard who applied were people that had probably, I would say, 10 to 20 years anyway, maybe more experience. And even some veterinarians applied for the program.
Awesome. That's great.
That is good to hear, because obviously, you know, I think in England too, don't they have to be licensed in England? Isn't it a whole different ballgame than it is here?
Oh, it's a completely different system. You can't even talk about them in the same breath.
Yeah. And I always wondered why we don't have that here. I always wondered that, why we don't have that here.
Why is it only there that it's, you know, it's like the only place in the world that it's that structure. There are a few European countries that have very established apprenticeship systems, but England or United Kingdom is the only place that has a really, you know, tightly structured education system that feeds people into a registered professional status.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think we're going to get that here at some point, but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon.
I would like to see it happen through a much broader availability of education than through just, you know, waking up one morning and the government says, okay, everybody has to be registered. I'd like to see the profession mature on its own, and to its own realization.
Where can people find it? Where can people find Hoof Search or Hoof Search? However you say it.
Well,
I can't do it.
No! Hoof Search can be found. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/hoofsearch. And there's a quick subscribe page at hoofsearching.com. And I'm very happy to speak to anyone. They can email me at hoofsearch@gmail.com or call me at any of my numbers that can be found with a web search, the number that we're speaking on now, obviously. But I'm really encouraged with the university libraries that are signing up for this. The Royal Veterinary College subscribed their entire class to it. That whole class is using Hoof Search as part of their course. And it's just very exciting to see the response to this. And it's the kind of project that you can drill deeply down into it and scrutinize all these research programs, or you can just browse it and say, wow, look at all these studies into imaging, or look at all these studies into racing injuries compared to how few there are on something else. And you, it really makes you start to think what our priorities are.
Well, Fran, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it. And it's Hoof Search. You go to Facebook and I just searched for it and it was right there. So we appreciate you joining us. Good luck with it.
Oh, I appreciate being on. It's lovely to hear from all of you again.
All right. Talk to you soon. Well, there you go. Now, I had a chance yesterday to catch up with the president of HorseLovers.com, our title sponsor for today, about a little situation, and I admire him greatly. His name is John. I've known him for years, and I spoke to him for about an hour last week, and then we got to catch up a little bit, and I want you to take a listen to this. Well, I've got John here, who is president of HorseLovers.com, one of our favorite sponsors. Hi, John.
Hi, Glenn. How are you today?
Good. You know, I know that you know that I've had a history in the tack business for 25 years and have been a consultant for many tack companies over the years. And there's one thing that is common when you work for a company is they try and always improve for the customers, right? That's what you want to do. That's the goal.
Always our goal.
Yep. And so it's a goal of any company. And it came, you know, it came to light over the last couple of months that, you know, some people were having a little bit of issue in the shipping end of horselovers.com. And, you know, we love you guys and our listeners love you guys. And I wanted to have you on because I know there were some customers, and it wasn't everybody, but some customers were having a problem. You apparently were doing what everybody dreads with their own computer or phone, and that's an upgrade to make things better.
Yes, we were. And that began the beginning of August. And it did not go as planned. But we made the change back to a dependable system that we've been using for more than 10 years. So we're happy to report that we are delivering and doing our normal business. And our customer service can actually give you sensible answers, which unfortunately they were not able to for weeks during the attempted cut over to a new system.
So what you're telling me is an upgrade did not go as planned. That's something new in the computer world, isn't it?
Absolutely. I've been around this horse game for 45 years, and I've watched many a company.
Yes, I've been involved with a few of those myself. And we all are. I mean, we all have our phones that when you put, you know, the new system in, all of your apps break, you know, and that kind of stuff. It happens. But
or
you guys
move them around and yes. You don't know where to find them.
Yes, exactly. Every time it updates, I can't find my app. So, you know, I think everybody kind of gets that. And you guys addressed it, and you're back to the old reliable system at this point. And I think you've addressed it. I've talked to you about it personally. What? We spent an hour on the phone last week, and I'm happy that you guys are really working to make this right. I know that for the people that were affected over that 7-week period of time, you're going to be contacting them directly, correct?
Absolutely. We're going to reach out and make sure that we have rectified anything that wasn't to their satisfaction. And we value our customers as we've had for the last 15 or more years.
And, you know, I know that you're going to be doing something special for them, too. And I think we might be involved in the end of that. So I'm excited about that. But if you were affected, they're going to be reaching out to you. They're going to set up an email address that you can contact if you have any additional problems. But I think most of them are being remedied at this point. You know what? It says a lot about you coming on our show to talk about this, by the way. It says a lot about you and the company, and I've known you for a long time. And so I knew that I knew that you would.
And your customers are so passionate and passionate about your Horse Radio Network and our company. So I really was frustrating to not come on sooner. But I really needed to have the solution fully in place before I could address it. So I'm glad that we are at that point, and we will be doing some exciting new things to present by Black Friday. So hopefully you guys will pay attention to this space and be looking forward to those events.
Well, and you guys are involved in Radiothon again, so we're very excited about that. Thank you very much. We appreciate you.
Well, thank you.
This is the third year. We had 56,000 people listen last year, and we're excited about where that will be this year. Now, the other question we ask every week, you know, you've heard our show. Jamie and I talk about the sales you're having, the products over there on horselovers.com. And the question we ask every week is, how can you sell stuff at this price and stay in business, too? Because we just every
well, week. our job is to buy right. I learned a long time ago from many buyers. They said it's not how what you sell it for; it's how well you buy it. So we get your attention by buying better and stronger than anyone else in the marketplace, and that's what we try to deliver: is things that may have been passed over by other companies, and we represent them. Along with every regular product, our breadth of line is larger than any single retailer on the market.
And it shows.
Hundreds of thousands.
It shows. We talk about it every week, and I don't think we talked about the same thing twice. So it's...
Yep, that's for sure.
It definitely shows. Well, it's horselovers.com. They have a whole bunch of... Speaking of sales, they have a whole bunch of stuff going on right now. So head on over to horselovers.com. I know that whores, you always have an outfit that you're giving away. There's always a contest like that going on. You always have the deal of the day and the flash sales. So you can trust to head on over there today to horselovers.com. John, thank you so much for coming on today.
Glenn, thank you for everything you do, and we really appreciate you and your customers that are passionate fans.
Well, you know, Jamie, it took a lot of guts for him to do that, and I'm glad he did. And we've said this 100 times, and I asked, I did a large quote Monday for a company that's looking at advertising with us, and I asked our auditors, why do they buy products that we talk about? And I don't know if you saw that post, Jamie, but it was very long. There were a lot of answers to that. But the most of the answers said because they believe in us, they believe in you and I and the other hosts on the network, that we're only going to recommend things that we believe in. And when I did hear that there were some shipping issues, I called them and they spoke with me for an hour to make sure that we understood exactly what was going on. And that says a lot about that company. We still believe in Horse Lovers. They are shipping product. Jamie just, you know, got noticed that something was shipping. It, you know, they're back to their old system. So that's all good. You know, crap happens when you're in business.
It's something that fortunately I wasn't in a hurry for. It was one of those like impulse purchases, like sweatshirt or something. But because it's taken so long, they're sending me something for free in the box. I don't even know what it is. The shipping thing came in my email. It was like, you're getting this and this free. So I don't know what it is, but I'm excited.
If you did have an issue over the last 7 weeks, they will be emailing you and addressing that too. And they're going to be doing some things for the people that were affected. But
I think I was affected 16 times because I ordered like
yeah,
so
you do
much
order almost every day.
Months.
Every Wednesday when we talk about what's on sale, you order. But
oh my God, look how cute those boots are. Gosh, stop sponsoring my show. I can't.
As everybody out there knows, that if we got to the point where we didn't believe you should buy from a company, we tell you. We have in the past. So, but we're not at that point with Horse Lovers. Matter of fact, just the opposite. I think they're stepping up and they're doing the right thing and they're coming out and making things right. So good for them.
Is it bad that I click on something and I'm super excited because they're like super cute boots and they have horses all over them and then it turns out they're kids' boots?
Which in your case, they might fit, actually.
I click on kids' products all the time. I want to dress like a 9-year-old girl.
And also, I wanted to tell everybody that this is new, that we are involved in the first annual Horse Nation Halloween Short Story Contest. Along with, we're doing that with Horse Nation. And what it basically is, if you submit a short story that's Halloween related, and this is what it is, whether you have an old tale that's been passed down from your barn family or you conjure up the best spooky story in your mind to put it down on paper, we're calling for you to submit it. What's going to happen is that they're going to pick out a couple of winners. It has to be less than 2,500 words or less. And they're going to publish the short stories on Horse Nation, so you'll be published, and we're going to read them here on the air Halloween week. So you're
oh, how fun!
Isn't that cool? And so you're going to get to read a Halloween story, Jamie.
Ooh, spooky.
And we're going to be doing that on October 31st episode of Horses in the Morning, appropriately enough, right? We have to do that. Matter of fact, that's a day, a Tuesday, when we normally don't have programming because it's the fifth Tuesday. We're doing a special episode just to bring you these Halloween stories for Halloween. So we're working with Horse Nation on that. That's brand new. Go to horsenation.com and you'll see the article there and how to enter. We'll post it on our Facebook page as well. Jimmy, if you could go to horsenation.com, find that article and post it on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning, that would be terrific. Now, you came up with a list that I thought was interesting.
Well, I wouldn't. Hold on. I'm texting a video of Baby Zara to one of our listeners right now. Sorry, I was busy. I wanted to give you an update on Baby Zara, by the way, because I keep getting messages. And so I'm sending Celeste's video, like something that happened. Do you want the list or do you want the Zara update?
A Zara update first. That's fine.
Okay. So, you guys, if you don't know, Baby Zara got really, 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 really sick last week and almost died. Like crazy virus, legs swelled up to tree trunks. Vet said that if I didn't call, I was of course like Thursday night, way late, or Wednesday night last week. Well, we had the inspection this past week, Sunday. So she didn't get to go to the inspection. She was just a mess, but she still had this like, and so everything, the medicine worked, everything is starting to resolve, but she had this weird swelling on her belly. And if you were to take your hand, your fingers, and like just kind of run your finger along the belly, all of a sudden there was like a dip in this little part on her belly. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like it's like muscle, 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 like a little valley, and then muscle, muscle, muscle. So I thought, and it's like on the underside side of her belly. And so I said, well, this is not right. And there's some fluid around there. And I don't know if it's related. So maybe her like gut's leaking. She's got a hernia. She's got, you know, all the million things. As a horse person, I'm thinking, how many ways is my horse going to die? You know, like, okay, so she's got this big hernia. And if it's a hernia and she's got gut, you know, gut things leaking into her bloodstream, then she's going to. A horse people. I don't know if I'm the only one, and maybe we can ask this on Facebook. Am I the only one who's like something is bad happening with the horse and you don't know what it is? You immediately like think the worst.
Immediately. And we do that with ourselves too. We always think we have cancer and we're dying.
Like, I have a headache. I've got a tumor.
That's right.
Okay, good. That's not just me. So I take this video, send it, but Dr. Hendricks is like, yes, I need to come out. Okay, so she comes out, but we didn't do an emergency. She came out and she's like, that's weird. That's never
okay.
Ever,
that's
ever
never good when the vet says that.
Never good when the vet goes, oh, that's really weird.
Or the doctor. I heard that a few times when they were trying to figure out I had Lyme disease.
That's weird. Never seen that before.
Never seen that so, before. Yeah. You don't want to be that one. No.
So it was just a weird like defect in the muscle and there was some swelling around it. So she's like, I think we need to ultrasound it. I'm like, of course we do. As long as it's like, we don't need to lay her down for surgery immediately. She's like, well, let's just look at it. You know, puts the ultrasound probe on it. And the abdominal muscle that covers her belly was split. Like there was a separation of about an inch in one tiny part of the
kinda
abdominal muscle.
Kind of like a
muscle.
Little hernia almost, huh?
But
a tear?
The fortunate part is there's like a muscle on the top and then there's a muscle underneath that really holds everything in. And that muscle was fine. She's like, what could have happened to her? I mean, she's out by herself. She's been out by herself for a month and her Chili's, the paddock next to her. And so I'm like, she didn't get kicked. And she's like, she must have. And there was like a little abrasion. So she must have just like run into a tree or something. At the same time, all of this was going on. Dr. Hendricks is like, I cannot.
Are they separate issues?
She said, I cannot for the life of me connect these two things. There is no connection whatsoever. It was just a total.
So one thing didn't cause the other.
I thought, oh my gosh, the reason her leg swelled up was because she had a hernia and was leaking bacteria into her system, made her leg swell. I had this whole hypothesis. She's like, no, just a freak thing. So what do I do about it? Nothing. She goes, I can't even tell you what to put on it. If you would feel better putting something on it, I don't know, DMSO. And I was like, DMSO does not make me feel better.
It makes me taste like cabbage.
Yeah, it tastes like garlic to me. I'm like, no, I'm not going to put DMS on it. She's like, you know what? She doesn't need it. So she goes, I can't even. She's just let it heal. And she goes, there might always be a little defect in the abdominal cavity there. She's like, the muscle underneath it is perfectly strong and perfectly fine. It could grow back together. It could not. You may have a little bump. She's like, it's not going to affect her performance. She doesn't think. She goes, if it's cosmetically drives you crazy later in life, then you can be in a, I don't know, stitched up. She's like, that's really not a great place. So... So there you go. Yeah, you know what I like to do? Just... I like to take new freakish things and just educate the local veterinarians about things that they didn't know could happen.
And then pay the large bill that they give and you for then, hanging out with you for hours.
She said to me, she was like, Jamie, you were doing so good. You were doing so good. And then this, because I
finally got your
this,
bill under $1,000 a month.
Yeah. Pink had to have an injection this past week in one of her joints because she's been lame. And she's like big, fat mare getting back to work, a senior citizen. So we like did that on Monday of last week. And that's expensive. But, you know, it was like, okay, she's going to have a job. She's going to be fine. This is what we're going to do. And then Wednesday, the baby. And then Monday, the baby. She's like, you were doing so good, Jamie. I was so proud.
How are you hiding these current bills from Chad? What new method do you have?
Oh, there's no hiding things like this. There is no hiding things like this. But I got to tell you that when this whole thing happened and it's, you know, I'm over at the barn and I'm on the phone with him, you know, like you said, there's, what can he say? But he's like, I said, I'm going to have to call her. It's going to be expensive. It's going to be expensive. And he goes, well, it's our baby. You know, do what you have to do. I was like, I love you so much. Then the most recent one, he was like, really? Again?
So does every time you get a vet bill, does he get 12 more golf games?
You know what? Honestly, I keep the horse stuff separate from his stuff. So, but like the money that comes into the farm, which is the way we just manage it, the money I spend at Horse Lovers, the money that comes into the farm for lessons and board, all that is in a separate account. And so that is when he was like, we sat down and we like went over the bills and he's like, oh my God, you make with going out there and teaching and feeding and doing all the stuff you do and cleaning and everything. He goes, you make $6 a day.
Yep, that sounds about right.
I was like, so you're saying I'm making money?
That's right. You made anything. That's good.
I made $6 a day. That's when one instructor I had hired was like, can I get a raise? And I was like, no, you're fired. $6 a day, but totally worth it. Yeah. So that's when I quit telling him how much I spent on stuff.
Yeah, that's like, probably a good idea.
We're done. I didn't need that realism. Okay.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a short break for a song that I have for you, and then we're going to come back with a list. So I'll let you pick out which list you want to do. It is Crappy List Wednesday, so pick a bad one. What I wanted to play with, it's only a couple minutes long. What I wanted to play for you was one of the winners, the finalists in Equestrians Have Talent. So we had three finalists now, and one of those finalists...
I'm way behind. I'm so sorry, because once I heard Lucas didn't make it, and I listened to his awesome...
you just were tuned out at that point.
I tuned out. So what's been going on?
So, well, we have three finalists now, and if you head over to stablescoop.com, we made that announcement on the show that was published yesterday. So you can hear that one of those was an auditor named Abby, and she sang a song called Cowboy and Me, and what I'm going to do is the three finalists, I'm going to play them on the next couple of shows here on Horses in the Morning, the winners, and then they all now have to submit another entry, and in 2 weeks we will have the finals, and the final voting will be done by our listeners of who wins Equestrians Have Talent. So we have three at this point, and one of them is Abby, and this is what she did. She sang,
I'm gonna sing along, I love this song.
All right, oh, here we go.
Sometimes I'm my own.
You know what this contest did for me?
Siobhan, the rest
Thank you, Abby, by the way.
The
that was beautiful. Much better than Jamie's version.
I've done for foolish
and
pride.
you're just showing everybody what I was just going to say.
The face that
this contest has made me realize that we have no talent at all, and the listeners really should be doing the show.
I guess that's just a cow.
And there's evidence right there, right there.
Gosh, it just takes me to okay. I need to talk about Heartland for a minute.
Oh, no.
Something happened yesterday, and I was so sad. I'm in season 9. I'm not going to give anything away, but this is, like, so sad. I was crying so hard. I was depressed the whole freaking day after watching an episode in season 9 of Heartland yesterday. Okay?
Well, so anybody that hasn't... Anybody that's not caught up on America's Talent has to turn off the thing. Go, just skip ahead 2 minutes. You must have been truly depressed when you saw who won that.
Oh, she's so cute, though. And her last thing was amazing. So
I'm
really...
sorry. If you can sing like that with your mouth closed, you're doing pretty good.
Right?
But I know how you love ventriloquists. And I just thought of you and I went, yes, that's who I was rooting for the whole time. And half the reason I was rooting for her was just to piss you the hell off.
Oh, so, my God. She's so cute. And she's so cute. Funny. And she actually has talent. Unlike that weird dude with all the old man puppets that comes out there.
You better watch it. Jemmy likes Jeff Dunham. Him too. So
he's
you're outnumbered here on this show. You're way outnumbered. So now
he's really funny, Jamie.
Yeah, see?
Oh, wait, hold on. Time out. Do you like the Big Bang Theory?
Oh, you do, right?
No comment. Yeah, actually, I really do.
See?
It's just a class of people that I'm dealing with.
You need new friends, Jamie.
You have two geeks on the corner now.
Yeah,
Jamie.
Sorry. You're done. But I was happy she won. She was the one I was rooting for the whole time.
I thought she was adorable. I love
her. Then the little Asian girl was so cute too.
Oh, I wanted to punch her in the mouth.
Really?
I'm so sick of her. Like, I was just sick
she
of her.
Did have rehearsed answers to everything.
That's
but then she's like 8. So I mean, we have to give her a break. She could sing. But there were
only say out loud that I wanted to punch a little girl in the mouth.
No, you probably shouldn't say that. Now, I will say, though, this year's finalists were really good. I mean,
I really like the dog hero. Okay.
Oh, she had such a story. Maybe she can move out of her car now. Maybe she can get a job.
I hope so.
Yeah. But there were some really good ones this year. There really were.
Yeah.
And the woman from Africa, I was kind of rooting for her to win, too.
Oh, my God. She was amazing. I cried like crazy every time she came on, the girl in the plane crash.
Yes.
Oh,
I really kind of wanted her to win. I was between her and Puppet Girl, but I couldn't. Yeah, either one would have been fine, but I really wanted her. She's going to have a career. She has an amazing
show
voice.
Ended a month ago, just so
yeah, and
knows.
I finally got caught up because of Irma. That's why I couldn't talk about it. We watched the finals last night. So
okay, see, I'm like into The Voice and the blind auditions, and I'm way past.
Well, they have a new judge there this year at The Voice too, right?
Oh, Jennifer Hudson is amazing.
Is she?
Amazing.
Did Jennifer
amazing.
Hudson win American Idol?
She did not win. She was like 7th.
Okay, but she was on American Idol. That's where she got her start, right?
On American Idol. She's gone on to win Oscars and Grammys.
She's the one that also performs on Broadway.
She does. And she's also the one who's like, her brother and mother were murdered
were
by
killed.
Somebody's boy.
That
I mean,
wasn't too long ago, right?
The most tragic story of tragic stories. So it's just unbelievable. So she's been amazing. If you don't watch The Voice, you're missing out. We're going to stop talking about our guilty pleasure, except for Heartland. Heartland. I'm so sorry, Grandpa Jack. I'm sorry.
Well, we have time here before we get our next guest on to do a short list. Do you have one for us? It is Crappy List Wednesday.
Well, I have this cute blog that was written by, let's see, who wrote this blog? I'm trying to find it. It is a blog from Hello My Livia. It's called How to Be a Better Horse Show Boyfriend. This is a boyfriend's instructions that he wrote on his girlfriend's blog. because this is a dude talking to all the other dudes that are at horse shows. He starts out like, all right, guys, if you're reading this, there's a fairly decent chance you've been to a horse show. If you're reading this and you haven't been to a horse show, then A, why are you here? B, you're a terrible horse girl significant other, and she's probably mad at you. He says, it goes on to say that being a horse boyfriend or husband is unlike watching any other sport because, quite frankly, there's just not a lot of spectating going on. It's a relay race of hauling, holding, schlepping, reacting, maybe a little bit of watching.
That is so true.
Being around your woman while she's competing means that for the next several hours, the horse is the center of her attention and you are essentially Pluto. You have to be barely seen, not heard. But if she needs a planet, then it's handy that you're there.
But he just nailed that.
Yeah. So he says, now, before I'm made out to be a hater who dreads going to shows, you must know that watching Olivia compete, win and win more is absolute joy for me. Her horse Frankie is awesome and blah, blah, blah.
Let me guess. Dressage, so, right?
No, I think he's a show. She's a show jumper.
Okay.
Yeah. He says, here's the man's guide to surviving a horse show. Number one, embrace the smells. I think there's something wrong with my girlfriend's olfactory receptors. She seems to think that horse manure, hay, urine, and general barn smells are like a Yankee candle burning softly in a cinnamon factory. This is the same woman who will get in my car and gag at the Febreze air freshener. Number two, become the quote, invisible mule.
Oh, after and every, you don't even have to go any further. Every boyfriend / horse husband knows exactly what you mean. We know exactly what you mean. Carry shit and shut up. That's pretty much what it comes down to. Yep.
Nice job, Trash Mouth. Yeah. Yes. She'll need things like water handed to her to someone to hold the reins while she takes care of something, someone she can hand her phone off to when it's go time. If you're one of those guys that, go on to say that basically you're there to hold stuff and shut up.
Yep.
And you're going to be walking alongside her while she's mounted, so don't wear flip-flops. And then he goes on to say, actually, no man should ever wear flip-flops in public for any reason, so write that down. Next, learn to be a cell phone camera expert. Unless you're a step ahead of me and you have a nice camera, learn how to film around. You need to get good at keeping the horse in frame, zooming in and out as you go. Olivia has this blog where she posts her videos, pictures, and don't embarrass her. Don't embarrass your girlfriend on their Instagram account because you need to do a good job. Number four, bring water. Seriously, half of you people are dehydrated throughout the entire day. This is a bit to do with horse shows being outside and everything to do with not being a moron. So if you're wondering why you have a headache at 1:30, it's because you didn't drink water. And he's actually talking to the dudes. As a dude, don't forget to drink water. And finally, number five, learn the sport. As cool as it is to watch your girlfriend or wife pilot around a one-ton beast that has a mind of its own, it's much more fun when you actually know what's going on. Imagine going to a hockey game for the first time and wondering why the figure skaters with shoulder pads are hitting each other. So anyway, this, and he's of course hot and she's of course beautiful.
Yeah,
so
of course. Yeah.
One more reason to love them.
And that is so true. Everything he said is so true. And we all learn it the hard way though.
I'll post that link on our horses.
And we all make the mistakes of trying to console them immediately when they come out and they're crying their eyeballs out. Not a good idea.
Well, we talked to Gamal Awad, who was like Holly Bennett's husband, and he just said, no, you just stand there.
No, you just stand there and hold stuff.
You just stand there and hold stuff, and if they look at you, you're there. Like, you're in.
They'll come to you later after the horse is dealt with, and then they'll cry on your shoulder, but you don't do it immediately. You walk away. You just stand there and look. Like a
stump. You know what he does? Chad will stand off to the side, like on cross country or in show jumping or in dressage. It's always the same thing. When I'm finished or when I gallop by him on cross country, he'd go, yeah, baby! It doesn't matter where I am. It can be in dressage. I finish like, halt, salute. Yeah, baby! If you watch any of the videos of me competing, you will hear that at some point. Yeah, baby!
Whether you're doing good or not, he's in there for you.
Sometimes he mixes it up. He's like, baby, yeah!
True fighter pilot style.
Just do something and be quiet. And then he just stands there quietly.
All right, let's go to our next guest. And this was a recommendation by one of our auditors, Claire. And we have Gretchen coming on, who is with the Calvin Center Equestrian Program in Hampton, Georgia, which is not too far from Atlanta, is it, Jamie?
Hampton, Georgia, just south of Atlanta.
Yeah, very good. Well, good morning, Gretchen.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you for joining us today. You know, on Monday, we had the people on who are running what were they doing? It was help me out here, Jamie. It was a therapeutic competition at the Pennsylvania Horse Show. So it was so cool to talk to her about what they're doing as far as competing, and you're kind of doing the same thing at the Georgia Special Olympics, and has been going on for a while. So tell us a little bit about the Georgia Special Olympics and what they do.
Oh my gosh, I helped in those. That's so cool.
Oh, fun. Cool. Very cool. Yeah. Yeah, so we are involved in, and actually coming up next week, it's next weekend, and the Georgia State Fall Games are coming up, and they do multiple fall games, but we are obviously involved in the equestrian one, and it's a 3-day competition. It starts on Friday and ends on Sunday, and athletes will be competing in everything from dressage and Western horsemanship to English equitation and Western riding to trail competitions. And then probably the funnest part of the weekend is on Saturday afternoon when we have our unified drill competitions and the riders. So three Special Olympics athletes and three unified partners or two or total teams of four or teams of six compete in drill teams with their costumes and to music. And
they probably love that.
That's probably the most exciting.
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
Yeah, I bet they love that. So are you talking all different levels of therapeutic riders at this point?
Yes, absolutely. So competition starts with beginner one, and at a beginner one level, a rider will have a leader and two sidewalkers assisting them on either side, all the way up through advanced two. And at advanced two, you're talking about completely independent riders that are doing walk, trot, canter tests, fully independent. So it runs the gamut, all levels of riders, all levels of assistance. It's across the board.
Now, do you bring your own horses or are the horses supplied?
Nope. Every team brings their own horses. So there will be over 100 horses. The competition actually takes place in Gainesville, Georgia, at Chicopee Woods Agricultural Center. And we basically fill up the agricultural center. There'll be teams and horses from all over the state of Georgia. We'll be bringing 10 horses of our own for our team and 22 athletes and six unified partners that will be competing with them. And then we also bring about 20 volunteers with us to help make it
all
happen.
Holy cow. Did you rent a bus or what? Jeez.
We're like a giant caravan. Yeah. It's like taking a city.
It is. That's a lot of people to be bringing. And, you know, good on you for putting it together where it's gotten to the point where you can bring that many.
Right. It truly takes a village. We have a lot of awesome volunteers that help make it happen. We have folks, and we've been doing it. This is, I think, our seventh year that we've done it here at the Calvin Center that we've participated. And so we have folks that really have taken on. I mean, we have a volunteer that is completely responsible. Her entire job during the games is to manage the tack room and make sure the right saddle gets on the right horse at the right time. We have a volunteer that manages the uniforms and makes sure that the riders get their numbers on their back and get their half chaps on and get their hairnet on and all that good stuff. We have a volunteer that stands ringside and makes sure that when it's, 5 minutes before a class, they text down to the barn and say, get this horse up here, or we need this horse, or hold on, the classes are running behind. So, it really takes a village to get everybody in the right places at the right time, but we've got awesome volunteers that help make it all happen.
We were just talking about boyfriends at horse shows, and you know, even for just anybody going to a horse show, it kind of takes a village. But in this case, it even takes more people. And without those volunteers, I know that you wouldn't be there. I mean, it's the volunteers that really make the Therapeutic Riding Centers work.
Yes, absolutely. The volunteers are, I mean, they're the heart of the program. They're what make it all happen. I mean, truly, they're the ones from, I mean, being leaders in the ring to being the ones that feed the horses to being the ones that do fundraising and development to, I mean, just anything. We absolutely could not function without volunteers. There's no way.
Okay. So, but I have to ask you, I have to ask you this story because the horses are saints that do these. I mean, they all should be sainted immediately after they die that work in the therapeutic riding so programs. True. But you must have a story from one of these shows where the horse wasn't so much a saint and decided to have a bad day.
We totally do. We have a great story. We have a little horse named Brownie. And Brownie is, he's right on that horse pony line as far as size and also as far as brain. Like, you know, the brain can go pony or it can go horse depending on the day. And Brownie at home has a tendency, and as a therapeutic riding center, one of our standards that we have to follow is that anytime there's a lesson going on in the arena, the gate has to be closed. But if the gate is not closed for any reason, Brownie's a gate magnet. Like he can find an open gate in about 30 seconds flat. and so we had a rider doing her dressage test. And she was riding, intermediate three, which means that you're riding independently, but you have a handler just kind of standing in the ring in case you need them. Basically they're there, but you're riding fully independently. And so Brownie did a beautiful center line, went straight down center line, X halt salute. It was really nice, like right on track with the test, you know, C track right. And then all of a sudden, like, instead of going down the long side, he goes ahead and does this, like, KXM diagonal and picks up speed as he's going down the diagonal, picks up a canter, and takes super cute little jump right over the side of the dressage arena. And the rider who was riding,
every dressage rider's nightmare.
Yeah, she stuck the jump and then she kind of toppled off right after the jump, and she was fine and everybody was good, and we laugh about it to this day because I'm like, well, you told me you wanted to learn to jump.
let me tell you something right now, that in a competition in the eventing world, if your horse does that, they do not appreciate it. Then, if you are going to pick up your canter going to the corner and your horse happens to take one canter stride and leap out of the dressage arena and run away, they do not reward that.
That's not a 10. That's not a 10.
Right.
No, not a 10 in that movement.
It's so not a 10.
Sadly, yeah, they don't appreciate that whatsoever. And you kind of get eliminated.
Why is it appropriate, though, it was a pony named Brownie? I mean, it's just perfect.
Yes.
So what do you...
No, we all laugh about that story. Everybody's fine, and it's a good story years later. And Michelle, she'll be competing. The rider's competing this year. She's now a walk, trot, canter athlete, so she's...
Oh, good for her.
...at the advanced level and fully independent, and has moved up off of Brownie the Pony, so hopefully her horse this year will stay in the ring for her. We'll see.
Lisa Wysocki, who you know, who runs a therapeutic riding center
is
well known, and we're reading her book right after you, actually. We're reading it on the air.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
Awesome.
So she had a question for you. She wanted to know, without using names, because I know you can't, but what is your biggest or most heartfelt success story? That one individual, and I know you can't use names, but...
Sure. So our biggest success story would for sure be one of our riders that I worked with, and another one, like, probably across the board, my favorite thing about Special Olympics is watching riders progress through the levels, you know, starting at a level where they need pretty serious assistance and then progressing to a level of independence as they keep riding. And so we have one young man who has ridden with us, and he started out in our intermediate levels, meaning that you have a leader that attends at the head, at the walk, and at the trot, and progressed up to the advanced level. And the first year that he was doing the advanced test, he really, really struggles with left and right. Like, it's just, directions are very, very hard for him. And
I'm with him.
You know,
I'm with him.
Dressage tests are full of lefts and rights. And he was doing, in the Special Olympics level, the advanced one test is like the a regular training one dressage test. So it's got your walk, trot, canter, and your circles. And man, like practice after practice, we worked on the 20 meter circles at E and B to the left and to the right. And he'd turn the wrong way. And I'd be like, no, you're on the right. You're on the right. And, you know, I can't call this for you. That's a show like this. All I can do is call the directions and you're just going to have to, like, you're going to have to. And we put a bracelet on, you know, red for right. And we had another color for left. And I was like, just look at your wrist. And if I call right, you just got to go where the red is and all these things. And I was like, man, we're never going to get this. And in the first year that he did it, it went okay. It was not, it was a bit more of a freestyle test perhaps than a training one. Dressage test. He sort of made up his own pattern, but, you know, he did it and that was exciting and he did it. And so we talked about the next year, like, now you've done it. Now you've done the advanced test. You cantered on your own in the ring. So now we're going to work on the accuracy. And so the second year, like, we worked and worked and worked and it got a lot better and it got, you know, and went, and it was just one of those, like, he worked really hard. It was good. And he put in a good test. And one of the challenges, of course, of, you know, a therapeutic riding program and older horses is that unless you, and they're older and they're doing a lot at the show. And so he didn't pick up his canter aid. He did everything correctly. The horse just didn't pick up the canter. So, he didn't place at the top of the class. You know, and I said, but you did it. Like, you got your circles went the correct direction. You asked correctly. Everything was really, really good. He was a little disappointed in himself. So last year, we're on year three now. And last year, you know, and now he's kind of got the circles and he's worked a whole year on refining his aids and using his whip and all those kind of things. And so he goes in the ring and he puts in a really nice test. And he came out and he got the gold medal. And yes, and he just is beaming. And it was like, and his dad has been very actively involved in all of it. And the coolest part of the whole story is his dad every year not only volunteers with our program, but also volunteers and just, like, everyone at the games knows if you need something, you go find this young man's dad. Like, he will help. He's always over helping with the medals. He's helping at the ring. Like, he's everywhere helping. So he was over there. And he actually got to be the one to put the gold medal around his son's neck.
What a great story.
It was really cool. Yeah. Yeah.
What a great story.
I mean, that's why we do it, for things like that. It's so worth it.
Well, and you're a good storyteller too, but I know it costs some money to do all of this. How do you, you know, to transport 24 students and 10 horses and all these other volunteers and all that stuff. How do you pay for everything?
Absolutely. So the policy behind Special Olympics across the board is that athletes should not have to pay for any part of their Special Olympics participation. And the state of Georgia, Special Olympics Georgia, raises quite a lot of funds on their end to pay for things like, so we pay a very, very minimal entry fee for each athlete. It's like $22. And the state of Georgia then provides hotel rooms during the games, and that helps cover the cost of the rental of the facility and all of those kind of things. And then we do fundraising on our end to cover the cost of transportation of the horses, feeding the horses, hauling all the trailers up there, additional volunteer housing, because we have volunteers beyond what is included in our allotment that we're allowed to take to the games, additional parent housing, because we want to make it we want to help make it affordable for the parents as well. So all of that is through fundraising on our end and through individual donor gifts primarily. We do a barn dance to help raise funds for it. We get a lot of support from our local tack and feed stores that help provide shavings and hay for us, because we have to do all of that too, of course. And then mostly through the support of generous donors who believe in what we're doing and help out with donations.
Well, what's the website where people can find it?
It is calvincenter.org.
calvincenter.org, and that's in Hampton, Georgia. You've been a delight. You're a great storyteller. Thanks for joining us, Gretchen, and good luck to all of them at the Georgia Special Olympics next weekend.
Thank you, and thanks for inviting me to come and talk. I enjoyed talking with you guys.
And we also want to thank Auditor Claire making sure that we found out about it. We appreciate her as well. Thanks, Gretchen.
All right, thank you.
What a great story, huh?
Yeah, just amazing. You know, I volunteered at the Special Olympics when I was in school. We had a lot of special needs students in our school. So they kind of matched us up with different kids. And so I got to take Reed to the Special Olympics. It was so much fun. What an amazing event. If you want to support anything, it's so fantastic at the Special Olympics. And in Georgia, they do such a great job. Kids are terrific. Like champions. Just awesome.
Terrific. Well, while you get your voice prepared, I'll just do some housekeeping here, because we have chapter 8, right, of The Opium Equation coming up next.
That's it.
And if you want to...
And it is... I gotta work on my Southern accent. There's a lot of Hill Henley in this one. And I had to edit out Hill's a lot of back. Cuss words.
Oh, did you? Well, I yeah. already said one on the show today, so what the heck? I mean,
yeah, there's worse ones in this one.
Well, so while you're doing that, we do have a bunch of the shows coming out. As I said, the Stable Scoop show is just out. I wanted to mention that again. We announced who the finalists are in the competition. Hear a little bit of each of their songs, which we'll be playing on our show here as well. Also on that Stable Scoop show, we have Michelle from MEI Travel, and we kind of answer some last-minute questions, some people looking at booking the cruise have. And Jemmy, I can announce today that Jemmy is coming along too, right, Jemmy? You're coming on the cruise?
Yay!
You're joining us?
My first cruise, and I'm so excited.
Oh, it's your first cruise?
I'm so excited.
Oh, wow. Cool.
My first real cruise. I mean, I've been out on a boat like for an hour. That doesn't count.
No, that doesn't count. No, this is much better. And you're going with our good friend. You're going to be bunking with our good friend, Charlotte, who is a pararider, ironically yeah. enough. So, and the two of you are going to get along famously. I guarantee you. You're going to have a good time.
She's going to be my drinking buddy for sure.
Yes. And Charlotte does like to do a little of that. So I think you're going to be good shape. She did say that you will fit on the wheelchair in case you can't get off of Key West, that you both can wheel yourselves back. So she did.
So I don't necessarily have to try to find a sidecar for her.
No, she said you'll be fine.
You can plop right on.
You can just plop right on. All right. Are you ready? Miss Jennings.
Let's do this.
All right. Let me do the opener. The Opium Equation is the first of the Kat Enright mystery series written by Lisa Wysocki. It features Kat Enright, a Tennessee Appaloosa horse trainer, Darcy Whitcomb, teenager with a trust fund, Bubba Henley, a budding juvenile delinquent, and John Gardner, a mysterious barn manager. And of course, there's Sally Blue. Thank you to the publisher Cool Titles for allowing us to read this book. If you want to read ahead, all four books in the series are available in stores and online everywhere or at lisawysocki.com.
Chapter 8. I rose early the next morning in preparation to feed. Unless it was mine or John's day off, I fed in the morning and John in the evening. Hank and I headed to the barn at 6 o'clock sharp under the cover of a dawn that promised nothing but thick gray clouds and more damp air. I loved mornings. I loved the cool stillness of the air and the sounds of stomps and whinnies as the horses greeted me. There's something very relaxing about watching a horse eat, and I treasured my morning minutes with my equine friends. Hank did too. He supervised as I pulled hay from the feed stall and distributed it to each horse. Hank's morning ritual was to stick his nose into every flake as if he was a quality control expert. Then he sat by the grain bin as I measured the correct amount of feed for each horse and mixed supplements that were formatted for that horse's individual needs. Hank then personally inspected each horse's stall as I looked over each horse for an odd bump or scrape that he or she might have acquired overnight, and I cleaned and checked the automatic waterers. By the time I was done, we were both ready for our own breakfast. On a sobering note, this morning on my walk back towards the house, I noticed there was still a county vehicle over at the Henley place, and I assumed that the fact that it was there meant the searchers had found nothing. I was back in my kitchen at 6:30 and had just poured a cup of coffee when the doorbell rang. It was Deputy Giles to come to tell me that they have called off the search in the immediate area. For now. We did an inspection of the area, and we know the kid's not in the neighborhood, but... he said, silencing my protest before I could voice him. We've stationed a guy at the Henley house. That's standard procedure. Chances are the Bubba's run away, but we take runaways serious like, and we won't give up till we find him. Wishing I'd never heard of Hill or Bubba Henley didn't do me any good, for it wasn't much of an hour after Deputy Giles left that Hill himself banged on my door. I've been talking to the cops for half an hour, and I want to know what makes you... and them think that by Bubba being out all night, Bubba ain't doing just what Bubba wants. he demanded as he barged into my living room. Have I mentioned that Hill Henley is dumb enough to throw himself on the ground and miss? Hill wore a long-sleeved denim shirt that had seen better days and filthy jeans that could have been kin to those worn by his son. What hair remained on his head was black and stringy, and his face had not seen a razor in 2 days or 3 days. The whole package made me want to dunk him in the horse trough. It would have been a big improvement. If I thought Bubba was somewhere safe, I wouldn't have had called the sheriff, I said calmly. The fact that I could handle Hill's wrath without batting an eye by being around Glenda made me want to cower like a kicked dog flicked through my mind. I led Hill through the living room and back into the kitchen where he helped himself to the last of my coffee and sat down at the kitchen table. At that point, I was so mad at Hill that I almost forgot to worry about Bubba. A 10-year-old boy does not stay out all night in the cold and rain voluntarily. The house with no electricity would be cold, but at least Bubba would have been out of the wind and dampness. Oh, yeah, he sneered. Go right ahead. Call the law on my boy. That's how you people handle everything. Get him the hard asses to snooping through my stuff and without a warrant, I might add. You ain't any different than the rest of them. You don't give a crap about old Hill. He jumped up and ran a cigarette-stained fingers through his straggly hair. And just what were you doing with my boy anyhow? That's what I want to find out. How the hell did you know he wasn't home and who invited you to call the police? Why didn't you mind your own gosh darned business? I try my damnedest to raise him in a God-fearing manner, and here's what goes on and happens. I was wondering if ignoring his son for years on end was Hill's definition of a God-fearing child raising. Yesterday morning, he was cold and hungry, I said, and quite worried about you. He was at the end of your driveway batting rocks at passing cars with a twitch. So, like any friendly neighbor, I invited him to lunch. But he didn't show, so I assumed you were home to... What do you mean he was hungry? I went all the way up to Ashland City and bought him a couple of them Happy Meals before I left. Bubba's too fat anyway. It's embarrassing the way he eats all the time. If he's an inch taller, he might almost be round. He just don't need to be eating everything in sight. So that's why you didn't take him with you? Because he's too fat? Because he embarrasses you? Because I didn't leave him by himself? My man comes in twice a day to feed. Bubba could have told him if he needed anything. My Bubba ain't all that smart, but he knows how to use a telephone. Let me see if I have this right. You haul a mare to Shelbyville, leave after supper on Sunday night, and don't come home until Tuesday morning. In the process, you leave a 10-year-old boy home with no food and no supervision, no electricity, and no place where he could reach you. No one to call. Now you just hold on a damn minute, Missy. Have you ever heard of the phrase child neglect, Hill? Do you understand the concept? Do you realize that if anything has happened to Bubba, it's your neck they'll hang, not mine, not the law's or no one else's, just yours? What the hell? You trying to scare me? He's my kid and I'll raise him as I see fit. Plus, I don't want to see him around this here place no more. He comes back from here and tells me how to run my barn. I try to lead a horse a civilized way with a chain over its nose, and he says, no, cat does it this way. And he wants me to take the chain off. He says, if I need a chain, then the horse don't respect me none. Well, I've been doing this a long time, and I don't need no learning from no kid or silly-ass girl. You assume Bubba will be back? Now, what's that supposed to mean? Of course he'll be back. But things will be different around here when that happens, I can tell you that. The law crawling all over my place ain't doing my business no good. It'll mess me up for years to come, I can tell you. And it's all you're doing. You're going to hear from my lawyer. That I can guarantee. He stood belligerently in front of me, a stupid, selfish man, overwhelmed with his own importance. Overwhelmed and losing the fact that his son was missing and probably in need of medical attention. But then, as if he could sense what I was thinking, the realization started to sink in. What am I going to do now? He said softly, his head sinking into his hands. Gee, maybe there was a real person in there somewhere, for Hill looked like he was afraid of losing Bubba, of losing face, of what the law might find in the search. I didn't know, but there was a glimpse of real emotion in his eyes. You're going to do everything you can to find him, I said as I led him back to the table. Who are his friends from school? What does he like to do? What kind of games does he like to play? You're his dad. You know the answers to all those questions better than anybody else. And those answers will help lead the searchers to Bubba. I don't know. I just don't know. I sighed and wondered about Bubba's mother. If he could have run to her or to another relative, but before I could ask, he stopped that idea cold. It's just me and him. With all the relatives I got around here, there's ain't been no family that's ever helped us. Not even his ma. Oh, man alive. I don't know what I'd do without that boy. Hill now looked trapped like a fox who realized he had no place left to run. I just wondered where it was that Hill had been these past few days. He sighed, muttered what sounded like an awful lot of an apology. what sounded an awful like an apology, and let himself out the front door. I got an empty feeling when I realized there was nothing I could do to help.